Excellencies, dear colleagues, we will start our press conference. But let me start by saying that I'm honored and happy to moderate this important joint press conference. My name is Habiba Mejrishek, and I'm the Director for Information and Communication for the AU. This press conference falls within the framework of the very good cooperation AU has with the UN system in general, and especially with the Office of the Special Advisor on Africa, OSA, DPEI, and ECA, the Economic Commission for Africa. This is a one-hour press conference, and allow me now to introduce our speakers. For gender purpose, I will start with Her Excellency Ms. Fatuma Nyarakubwa Ndanjiza, Chairperson of African Peer Review Panel of Eminent Persons, and to introduce and to thank very warm His Excellency Mr. Maged Abdelaziz, Undersecretary General and Special Advisor on Africa, as well as His Excellency Dr. Ibrahim Mayaki, Chief Executive Officer, Nepad Planning and Coordinating Agency and Interim Chief Executive Officer of the African Peer Review Mechanism Secretariat. Thank you, Excellencies. Our press conference will be as follows. I will open the floor for introductory remarks from our panelists, and after that, we will move to a session, a question and answer. Yes, I'm happy now to introduce His Excellency Ambassador Tete Antonio, the permanent observer of the African Union to the United Nations. Now, our panelists are all here. Thank you, Excellency, for joining us. So, as I said, I will now open the floor for our panelists for them to give introductory remarks on these very useful meetings we got during the week. Excellency Maged Abdelaziz, you have the floor.
Well, thank you very much, Habiba, and thank you for accepting to moderate this press conference. This is a sign of increased cooperation between the African Union and the United Nations, and sincere thanks also to our partners in the DPI and ECA who are cooperating always with us in supporting the African Union through our mandates related issues. This Africa Week, I'm sure that everybody here have been following what have been happening, starting from our meeting on the 1st of October with the regional economic communities, on the role of African regional economic communities in consolidating peace, security, governance, and development in the context of Agenda 2063, and ranging then going to the Africa Week, which started this Monday under the theme, The Africa We Want, Support for the United Nations System of the African Union, Agenda 2063, which witnessed a high-level panel attended by the President of General Assembly, by the Deputy Secretary General, who also attended the first meeting on the 1st of October, and two commissioners from the African Union, the Commissioner for Peace and Security, the Commissioner for Economic Affairs, and, of course, I am accompanied in this by our partners from the African Union, Dr. Mayaki and Ambassador Nyarakubwa, who is supported by two other colleagues from the APRM who are seated in the first row. This year's Africa Week is a very important improvement in the way that we are doing business with the African Union, particularly because it is marking the preparatory process of the post-2015 development agenda in the United Nations, and at the same time, marking the formulation of Agenda 2063 in the African Union, which is expected to be adopted in January next year. And this this kind of regional and international efforts prompted the African Union in the last Malabo summit to ask us to focus on popularizing Agenda 2063 and on ensuring the coherence, which is I'm sure that everybody can have a copy of this. If you don't have it, please contact our office. You will have it electronically or in a written form, and to ensure complementarity and cohesion between the regional office on Agenda 20, the regional efforts on Agenda 2063 and the international efforts on the post 2015 development agenda. And that is what the focus of the discussion was on, the three main pillars of our work: on peace and security, the Commissioner for Peace and Security spoke about that. On development, we had the Commissioner for Development Affairs in African Union. We had Dr. Mayaki, and on good governance issues and respect for human rights, we have also Ambassador Nero Kobwa and Ambassador Rashid and Dr. McDash have been also speaking in those events. The result of the meeting, that there is a strong enthusiasm in the support of both plans as a transformative agenda for Africa, being supported by the United Nations. And I would like to leave the opportunity for other members of the panel to speak about their own perspectives, and then we'll be more than happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Your Excellencies. Dr. Mayaki, please, you have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you. And I would like to thank OZA for the support it has brought in organizing this Africa Week, which is adapting itself to the evolution of a continent in terms of the challenges we are facing. So as the CEO of the NEPAD agency and interim CEO of the APRM Secretariat, it was a pleasure to contribute in terms of what we do as the Development Agency of the African Union and how APRM Secretariat is being organized in order to be a fully fledged institution for the years to come. Now, as you know, well, as you might know, our domains of intervention are related to agriculture, infrastructure, health, education, environment. And we have the responsibility to facilitate the implementation of all the African Union strategic frameworks. So that implies the necessary capacity to deliver at national and regional level, and at the same time, the capacity to partner with the specific UN agencies that are also delivering in these main domains. So the Africa Week is an opportunity to bring coherence in that partnership, strengthen the partnerships, and listen also to the views of our partners. This year, particularly, the Agenda 2063, which put in simple terms, reflects the vision that Africa is trying to construct for the next 50 years, has been enhanced. You remember, 50 years ago, the objectives of our leaders was to liberate the continent and fight for decolonization. The next 50 years will be about economic transformation, and if that these structural changes related to economic transformation do not take place, it will be a bad news for the global, for the world globally. So it is important that once we have that vision, we provide the necessary tools for the implementation, sir. And in relation to the post-2015 agenda, as you know, Africa has worked towards the construction of a common African position We have played our role in supporting the African Union Commission in the framing of that common African position. And that common African position will be the position that the African will defend during the negotiations related to the SDGs. Two key issues on the post-2015 agenda. The MDGs were focused on developing countries. The SDGs are focused, have a universal focus for Africa. Looking at the future, the issue will be transformation. So this is why the issues related to productive capacities, to industrialization, and within a global framework of sustainability will be absolutely key. And we are working within the African Union architecture in order to deliver on these specific issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Excellency. Let me now give the floor to Her Excellency, Madame Fatouma. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the panel, I'd like to, first of all, extend our appreciation to OSA for agreeing to partner with us once again. Last year, we were here for the 10th anniversary of the APRM and also the 50th anniversary of the African Union, OAU. And today, we are here to join efforts with the international community on promoting Agenda 2063, which is a bold blueprint for Africa in 50 years to come. We think it's been an agenda that has been very participatory, people-driven. It's an agenda that also caters for human rights promotion, rule of law, and also the promotion of peace and security. And we believe APRM as an instrument that is homegrown, an innovation by our African leaders from 2003 to promote good governance in Africa by promoting a self-review process starting with member states in four thematic areas of governance, namely democracy and political governance, economic governance and development, socio-economic development and corporate governance. For the last 11 years of APRM existence, we've been able to encourage African governments to uphold principles of good governance, address the challenges of poverty and underdevelopment, and foster development on the continent. APRM has been setting standards for good governance across the continent. We believe it provides an interesting and unique example of South-South peer review, and no other regional groupings world over has committed itself to similar peer review on political as well as economic governance issues. Over the years, we've been able to gather a wealth of information in 17 countries that have gone through peer review process. As you know, 34 countries are members of APRM. This is a voluntary process, and 17 of them have gone through a peer review process. We hope very soon Cote d'Ivoire and Cape Verde might also be joining us, making the number 36. So over 75% of our continent are member states. So we believe this wealth of information in four thematic areas of governance are going to play a contributory role both to the Agenda 2063 and also to post-2015 MDGs. And we don't think there is need to reinvent the wheel. Africa is not short of best practices. One of the best practices is APRM itself, a mechanism that has worked, a mechanism that have shown that African governments can be accountable, promote domestic accountability, a mechanism that has also served as a monitoring instrument to ensure that member states adhere to the principles of democracy, rule of law, and socioeconomic developments. And therefore, probably, we think both the post-2015 MDG and also the 2063 agenda could draw inspiration from this important mechanism. So for us, we think this is a contribution we can bring towards this agenda. But we want you to join efforts in showcasing this important mechanism because, yes, we are talking about development, but without a great foundation of good governance, once you have governance deficits, you cannot talk about security and stability, you cannot talk about sustainable development. So governance is really key. It's a driver for both Agenda 2063 and also post-2015 agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Excellency. Le meilleur pour la fin. I give the floor now to His Excellency Ambassador Titi Antonio, the permanent observer of the African Union to the United Nations. Excellency, you have the floor.
Thank you. I think we have heard governance and development. We have not yet spoken about peace, without which we cannot reach the Africa we want. While governance is, like one of your colleagues from the UN, I think Mar from UNDP called it as a software for everything. But we think 2063 should be can happen only if Africa is a peaceful continent. So the main message we echoed during this Africa Week is in two layers, let's say. The first layer is what do we want to do as Africa ourselves, and then how do we want the world to cooperate, especially the United Nations want to cooperate. Do we want the United Nations to cooperate with Africa for a peaceful continent? What do you want to do? In Agenda 2063, we established three goals. The three goals are, first one, peace and security, stability is preserved in the continent. And then to have this peace and stability preserved, we established two priorities. The first priority is to have an institutional structure which ensure compliance and accountability of all the bodies created by the African Union and the instruments, legal instruments. The second priority is to have an appropriate contribution defending the continent, including on a very crucial issue of peace building. The third priority goal is to have a peace and security architecture well functioning. As you know, not all the components of our peace and security is functional at this time. If you take the brigade, for example. Now, to have those goals materialized, we established three targets. I don't think I will go into details in the three targets we established, but I should maybe underline one of them contained in target two, which is silencing the guns in Africa by 2020. So how do we want the continent to collaborate with the rest of the world to collaborate with us? First, we think we need to introduce some qualitative changes in the way we cooperate while keeping peace in Africa. The role of the African Union as a central, listening to the continent. Second one, I think in some of the mechanisms we established with the United Nations, we need also to introduce some qualitative changes by going from discussions on, let's say, item on the agenda of the Council or the Peace and Security Council to strategic thinking of our relationship between the Peace and Security Council and the Security Council, as well as over level of like the joint task team. This will enable to have a kind of a common understanding of the principles, which is very important to have this relationship better working. I think those are the introductory remarks I would like to make at this point.
Thank you very much. Now we come to the second part of our press conference, and I will open the floor for your questions.
Yes.
Please, you have the floor in the room.
Sorry.
Yes, please.
I grab the microphone as the first question. I welcome you on behalf of the United Nations Correspondent Association. My name is Evelyn Leopold. I'm a contributor to Huffington Post, and I've had many and been in the UN and at the UN a long time. It's a very ambitious program that you've just laid out. I have two parts to it. First, how specifically can you help with peace in places like Darfur, South Sudan, Congo, Central African Republic, to just mention a few where there are wars going on? And secondly, in governance and peer review, how can you handle Zimbabwe, which has been running around in a circle with bad governance for as long as since I first lived in Africa?
Thank you. More questions? Yes, please.
Sure. Matthew Lee, Inner City Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access. Thanks a lot for this briefing. I wanted to ask about something that came up during the Regional Economic Commission's press conference that we did, and it has to do with peace and security, but the importance of Africa getting a seat with a veto, a permanent seat on the Security Council, and how important that is to this agenda. And also, there was some discussion of Libya, in which I know in that conflict the African Union had its own proposal to mediate more, and that was sort of jump-started by the NATO bombing campaign. What can you do? You think that Africa's kind of prominence in trying to mediate disputes has grown since then? Would that still be able to happen today? And what do you make of events in Libya since the African Union approach was rejected? Thank you.
Thank you. Let's come to response, and I will come back for a second batch. Please, Excellency, you have the floor.
Peace and security, before we come to governance, which my dear friend will take. Let's just take Sudan and Darfur. I think I will come back to the role of the African Union or what we have been doing in those parts of the world. I don't think any actor in Sudan and Darfur would have been able to do something if we didn't establish the panel of the wise, the panel, high-level panel led by President Mbeki. We have been present on the ground. It starts by Darfur and then extended even to the rest of the Sudan and now even further beyond the borders of Sudan. As we said during the presentation of our paper, the African Union had the advantage of having the kind of confidence from the government of Sudan, which was very helpful to have the United Nations even involved in Darfur. So I think what we are saying, how do we take advantage of this comparative advantage both our organizations, the United Nations and the African Union? This merging force is where we need to introduce some qualitative changes. Qualitative change in terms of common understanding of principles, as I said, but even beyond common understanding of principles, the question of financing when the African Union is involved in a peacekeeping operation on behalf of the international community. So I think we are present, and until now we are helping those countries to come out. Now, on Libya, this question is almost a daily now question since the situation in Libya has deteriorated. But we all remember that the African Union had a framework for Libya. We had a framework. Unluckily, the events which happened didn't allow the African Union to go ahead. But whatever we said at the time on Libya is happening, mainly the consequences in the country itself and as well as the consequences in the region. So this why we are insisting on having a common understanding on the principles. Because unless we do it, then we will have different scenarios of Libya repeated somewhere else. I don't know if I have...
Security Council seat, if you don't...
Oh, Security Council seat. What we are saying, if the veto is maintained the way it is today, we would like to have one, unless it's removed for everybody. But since the veto is there, we think the African country should have one. Now, the question we don't like it is when people try to ask us, but whom are you going to give it? It's not the question. We should first set the question of principles of having the continent represented at the Security Council, having all the powers existing in the Council, and then leave us the question of who is going to have it. We have seen how we have done, we have been doing. Yes, we have problems sometimes at the for the elections at the General Assembly and in other organs, but we have been a very exemplary continent in terms of selection of our candidates. So we will definitely be able to do so when it comes to this very historic moment expected by all Africans.
I would like to supplement just what Ambassador Tete have done. Through our contacts with African countries, there is a feeling that, next year, while celebrating the 70th anniversary of the United Nations and approving the post-2015 development agenda, which is going to be the development agenda for the next 15 years till 2030, it is only fair that we have a resolution on the Security Council reform as well. And I think that this issue is, of course, the Zulwini consensus, as Ambassador Tete Antonio was just saying, is asking for 2 permanent seats and 3 non-permanent seats, but with the veto right. It is written in the Zulwini agreed at the heads of state government level in Zulwini that as long as the veto continues to exist, it is a matter of justice that the African permanent members should get the veto right. But it is also stipulated that the position of the African Union is that the veto should disappear. So it is in the same consensus, Zulwini consensus, that have been there. I see that the issue is gaining more traction, and you must have followed the discussions about the limitations on the veto that happened on the high-level segment upon initiative from France and Mexico, and putting restrictions on using the veto in cases which have been mentioned explicitly in the 2005 documents, where there are war crimes, where there are crimes against humanity, where there is genocide, where there are 5 cases that are mentioned where in the 2005 document that have been the center of discussion. And this discussion could be an opening, I'm saying that this is done in the intergovernmental process, but we as Secretariat, we cannot contribute into it, and we cannot judge the final outcome.
Thank you. You will add something? Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. On the peer review and Zimbabwe joining, you know this African peer review mechanism is a voluntary process. We don't force members, but we do encourage members to be part of it because we believe governance is really an obligation for every member state. And what we are doing as a strategy is to undertake regional workshops, especially targeting the regional economic commissions, like, for example, the SADC, ECOWAS, and the East African Community. And through these regional workshops, we encourage, for example, if we undertake for SADC, to encourage countries like Zimbabwe also to participate and other countries that haven't been part of the process and share experiences, because APRM is not only about challenges identified in a member state, but it's also about good practices, so that member countries can learn from each other, and also the benefits, because once a country is well-governed, the issues of peace and security we are talking about will be minimized. It's one of the conflict prevention mechanism if you have strong governance. The other program that we are also undertaking to attract member states is to encourage regional parliaments, like, for example, the Pan-African Parliament, where APRM have developed keen partnership so that through Pan-African Parliament they can be able to reach out to various parliaments in the region. And through this, the message of APRM and the advantages accruing to APRM can also be communicated. So this is some of the strategies we are taking, and recently, APRM was also integrated into the African Union, and through the integration, now we have a platform, because we shall also be sharing our reports to the member states. This is a platform where even fellow member states, because one of the highest organ of APRM is what is called the African Peer Review Forum, where heads of state, the 34 heads of state of the APRM member countries, can now share with the rest, the remaining 20 countries, the good about APRM, and hopefully that this will be another strategy to attract member states that have not yet joined. But we hope also through you media, you can also raise a voice. Thank you.
Thank you, madam. Dr. Mayaki, something to add? Okay, so let's come to your question. Yes, please.
Abdelaziz Hali, La Presse de Tunisie. I will ask two questions, one in French and one in English. The first one is in English for Mr. Abdelaziz. We have the impression that there is two Africas. The Anglophone Africa, the countries belongs to the Commonwealth, and the Francophone countries. So, for example, Ghana, South Africa, Kenya, they have a good economic growth and good governance. But in the majority part of the Francophone country, there is bad governance in spite of Tunisia, which is a startup democracy. So how can we imagine to have an homogeneous program to develop, to make, to have a sustainable development in our continent? The second question is in French. Outre la misère sociale qui caractérise le continent africain et les difficultés de gouvernance, nous remarquons ces dernières années que beaucoup de foyers de terrorisme ont caractérisé notre continent. La recrudescence de la violence, les Shabab en Somalie, le Boko Haram au Nigeria, au Mali, les groupes liés à Al-Qaïda. En Libye, ces derniers jours, on a appris qu'il y a eu l'instauration d'un émirat affilié à Ansar Sharia et qui sont aussi affiliés à Daesh. En Tunisie, il y a la brigade Oqba Ibn Nafa qui est en train de massacrer les militaires tunisiens. Dans tout ce chaos, avec le problème de l'Ebola, comment peut-on vraiment rêver d'une Afrique unie, d'une Afrique qui pourra vraiment relever les défis et devenir un continent puissant malgré ses richesses, malgré sa force humaine et tout cela? On a tendance à croire que l'Afrique, elle est en train de tourner dans un cercle vicieux. Merci.
Thank you. Please.
Hi, my name is Sherman Bryce. Please, I'll ask in just English. I work for South African Broadcasting. I'm sure you've all noted the passing this past Sunday of Professor Ali Mazrui, the Kenyan intellectual who taught in upstate New York. I wonder if, on the occasion and in the context of Africa Week, some of you might share your thoughts on his passing. I know, for example, that Ms. Ndangiza is wearing something. The professor used to wear a scarf similar to the jacket you're wearing, so you might have some thoughts to share.
Thank you. Let's take one more question, and I will come back for a third batch. Yes, please.
And Charles Baltic Review, regarding African innovation, how are you working with the government of Sweden in achieving your economic goals?
Thank you. Excellencies, you have the floor for your response, please.
Thank you. Je vais répondre à votre question qui était en anglais, en anglais. There is a Harvard scholar, Dairon Acemoglu, who wrote a book some years ago, entitled Why Nations Fail. And it's very accurate on comparing dynamics regarding the causes of failure. And one of the key issues that comes out is the issue of extractive versus inclusive institutions. When Africa comes out of colonization, it inherits extractive institutions. So the leaders at that time have a huge challenge: how to build inclusive institutions, how to build nation states, and at the same time do it within most of the time boundaries that were inherited and not that were somehow artificial. So, in the last 50 years, a fact has to be put on the table. They have at least succeeded in creating the basis for nation states that are not only functional globally, but are trying to integrate within the continent. On your issue on Francophone and Anglophone, you are right. Anglophone countries are doing better in terms of economic performance than Francophone countries. It's a fact. We could debate on the causes, but globally, it's a fact which is it is not a subjective analysis. It's a fact. Now, the causes can be a debate. One of the issues that comes frequently is, as in terms of debate, is inclusive institutions related to the legal frameworks and the differentiation between the common law of the Anglo-Saxon countries and the type of legal system we have in the Francophone system. But it is a debate. It is a debate. But my take is that Africa has made very sound efforts in the last 50 years in creating nation states that are functional. Now, terrorism. The medium age of the Boko Haram fighter is 16 years old. What brings a 16-year-old boy be a fighter in earning less than $2 in being a fighter? So you have several issues there. You have the issue of a global terrorism context with its impact. You have the issue also of development. So that tension has to be managed, and it has to be managed not only nationally but regionally. But if we look at the mechanisms that the African Union has in terms of early warning regarding the conflicts, in terms of prevention, in terms of managing the conflicts, in terms of immediate response to the conflict, you see that there is an architecture which is existing and providing a response to what is effectively happening. And if we look at today, Nigeria, Niger, Mali, Mauritania, well, most of the reports show that Boko Haram not only has been contained, because I'm from Niger, they hardly do infiltrate Niger. They have infiltrated twice in the last 24 months, and it has been cut at the roots. So the efforts in terms of cooperation and intelligence between the countries of a region, Nigeria, Niger, Mali, Mauritania, Algeria, are very strong. And that cooperation is the cement that helps fight against the terrorism. So we should be optimistic because the mechanisms have been put in place and the prevention structures do exist. And the cooperation between the countries is very strong in order to lay a regional solution to these problems. And evidently, lastly, very quickly, governance has a double edge. First of all, for democracies to prosper, you need economic transformation. And this is what Agenda 2063 is about. But
The example of Rwanda, who left Francophone and to the Commonwealth, and now Rwanda has the best economic growth, perhaps in the whole continent.
I don't have an evidence to talk about that, so I it would be speculation. But Rwanda is doing very well. Rwanda is doing very well, but maybe for and she's from Rwanda. But so you see. Governance is extremely important. Yeah,
but, and what about the list of folks?
Exactly.
Maybe I want to add. I want to add quickly before I answer, and I know some of the panel members want to say something. But I just wanted to pick on one issue on Anglophone and Francophone. Really, I think this is one of the challenges we still have as a continent, and we need really to deal with these issues because. I don't know why you call ourselves Francophone, Anglophone, and Lusophone. Why don't we be Africans? Strive for this African identity, because united we are stronger. You cannot talk about Agenda 2015 when we are still fighting about who speaks very good French, very good English. The Japanese, most of Southeast Asian countries are where they are, not because of the language. It's because of technology. So we really need to invest our efforts in issues that matter and demystify these issues of languages. Because across the continent, most of our people are interrelated in one way or another. What we have is only artificial boundaries. So really we shouldn't be confused with these issues of Anglo. It's unfortunate because it's the type of politics you find in our continent, but we really need to deal with it, and I believe young generation can help us move forward. Let us look at substantial issues affecting the continent. People, when I look at my country, you are talking about Rwanda living, you know, I just wanted to say, according to our constitution, we still have three languages. Our national language is Kinyarwanda, which is the local language everyone can speak. The head of state, everybody, when they are communicating, they communicate in that language. But we also have official languages, which are French and English, so we still use those two languages. But of course, Rwanda as a country is also looking at interests. So when it comes to, that is why we are still in Francophone, but we're also in Commonwealth. If there was another block of Chinese where you have interest, you go there. So it's a question of... It's a question of interest. Let me come to the one point I wanted to say, contributing to what Dr. Mayaki was saying about the challenges to peace building and conflict resolution. APRM has been able, over the years, during the review process, to analyze some of the common structure and cross-cutting challenges that confront African states. And some of these challenges, which we think are conflict triggers, include the issue of diversity management. We've failed to manage our diversities, issues of ethnicity, issues of nationality, issues of religious issues, gender. Then there's also another issue of natural resource management. And the question you're asking, why is it that in Africa resources are a curse and not a blessing? But why is it that in other places, resources are a blessing? So these are issues that we have to deal with. The other issue is the issue of land, natural resource management, corruption, the issue of youth unemployment, the issues of separation of powers. So these are some of issues that cross-cut across the region. And in all our deliberations, especially when the heads of state meet, like during the 10th anniversary, we had a special roundtable session where our heads of state discussed some of these common challenges facing the continent. And we believe once these are fixed, we can be able also to fix most of the conflict that we have all over the region. Lastly, talking about Almazrui, really it's unfortunate that this giant African son passed away recently. And as we commemorate the African Week, it's also important to reflect about this African son who contributed a lot, especially as an academia in the area of political science and history. And his focus was mainly on understanding Africa, understanding our roots, understanding our challenges, the issues of the African identity. He was a great Pan-Africanist. And I think it's befitting as we are commemorating both the 51st anniversary of Africa, but also Agenda 2063. His thoughts, his ideas that he cherished should also guide us as we promote this African agenda of having a united and also peaceful and prosperous Africa. This is what I can say about him. But I know Dr. McDesh wanted to say something.
Maybe to add what my brother, Dr. Mayaki, just said on terrorism. Let's not forget that the African continent was pioneer to have the one of the first convention on terrorism. We established the center in Algiers, which is working still. It was pioneer at the time when terrorism was not a global issue, taking into account the reality on the ground. And we, as Mayaki said, we have been adapting our tools as well to the current situation. I think many of you have been following the communiques of the chief of intelligence of African continent. All the African continent have been meeting, which is a pioneering example also in terms of cooperation and adapting the current tools. We are using the different tools as well as the enforcement. In Somalia, you know, all of us know the situation. And I wonder why it was not a breaking news that the African Union took the headquarters of El-Shabaab in Somalia. If it was not, so please make it as a breaking news in your next publications. It was not very echoed. We issued a communique on that. But this, the fight on terrorism and victories mm-hmm. also we are fighting on the ground.
Thank you, Ambassador Tite. We have additional information from the floor, please.
Not from the floor, from the panel. Yeah.
From the panel.
Yes. It's working?
Which one?
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Je voudrais répondre en français à mon ami tunisien en tant que membre du panel du mécanisme africain d'évaluation par les pairs. Cette problématique linguistique comme césure, à mon avis, il faut être très prudent là-dessus. Et nous sommes d'abord des panafricanistes, quel que soit le pays, quelle que soit la langue que nous pratiquons. D'ailleurs, en Afrique, il n'y a pas que l'anglais et le français. Il y a aussi les pays arabophones, les pays lusophones. Et lorsqu'on examine, si vous voulez, de façon grossière, donc on peut peut-être voir que la qualité des institutions, un certain nombre de progrès sont réalisés davantage dans les pays anglophones. Mais je peux vous citer des pays francophones qui sont sur le chemin de la croissance, qui sont résilients dans leur économie, quels que soient les problèmes. Je pense à votre pays, par exemple, ou à votre voisin, l'Algérie, dont je viens. Je pense à d'autres pays également qui sont en train d'évoluer de façon positive dans la qualité des institutions. Je pense au Sénégal, que je couvre du point de vue de l'analyse. Je pense également à des pays qui, à la fois, sont francophones et anglophones. L'île Maurice. L'île Maurice est dans le Commonwealth, mais elle est aussi dans la francophonie. Donc, à mon avis, il faut tirer simplement les meilleures pratiques des pays, qu'ils soient anglophones ou non, et les développer à l'ensemble de tout le continent. C'est ça notre démarche. Et cela, donc, à mon avis, peut être beaucoup plus positif. S'agissant du terrorisme, ça a été dit par mon collègue représentant de l'Union africaine ici, aux Nations unies, il faut combattre les problèmes à la racine. Il y a effectivement des origines qui sont des origines idéologiques, mais ce n'est pas les plus fondamentales. Les plus fondamentales, c'est parce que c'est le terreau d'un certain nombre de problèmes sociaux, comme le chômage, la corruption, qui développe le terrorisme. Et lorsqu'il y aura, si vous voulez, des programmes de développement, et ça, nous avons vu ça dans le cadre de nos analyses et de nos évaluations des pays sur leur gouvernance, lorsque la gouvernance s'améliore, lorsque la qualité des institutions, la séparation des pouvoirs, la qualité des institutions s'améliore, et lorsqu'il y a de la conduite, une bonne conduite des politiques économiques, le recrutement du terrorisme diminue. Donc le centre de recherche qui a été mis à Alger contre le terrorisme dont on a fait état, donc a mis en évidence cela. Donc je vous renvoie à ces études-là. Pour le reste, je pense que nous sommes optimistes sur l'amélioration de façon globale de la gouvernance à travers nos pays membres. Merci.
Merci beaucoup. Give the floor to
yes,
Dr. Mayaki, please.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't answer to the question on Sweden and science and technology. We have a strong cooperation there, but with Sweden on science, technology, and innovation. Every year, we do an assessment of the investments in research and development in 47 African countries, and we produce what we call an innovation outlook. This innovation outlook is a product that we launch as a knowledge product tomorrow. And it is important because it gives policy guidelines in order to have the adequate science, technology, and innovation policies on the continent. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. There is still room for two or three more questions. Please, let me give the floor to... Yes, please, go ahead.
So this is Sophie de Belmanière for Le Point. And I have a very global, systemic question. Now, the French, we have 9,000 troops on the American, on the African continent. The American people have 7,000. And in total, this raises the number to 30,000 foreign troops. So do you think this is a blessing or a curse for development and peace on the African continent? Thank you.
Thank you. Your colleague. Yeah, please.
Okay. My name is LC2 TV and BBC Africa Radio. But I'm going to ask my question in French. I want the answer in French, if possible. Okay. Est-ce qu'aujourd'hui, l'Afrique a-t-elle une voix aux Nations Unies? Quand on sait, par exemple, que environ 60% des activités du Conseil de sécurité sont concentrées sur l'Afrique, sans qu'une présence certaine de l'Afrique, enfin, je parle en tant que, sans une présence en tant que membre permanent du continent. Le débat est en cours, je le sais. Et quand, face aux grands défis du continent, qu'est-ce qui justifie la lourdeur, la lenteur des leaders africains? Le cas du Mali, le Conseil de sécurité tenait plusieurs réunions demandant aux leaders africains de venir avec une feuille de route qui a tardé pendant longtemps avant que le Conseil ne prenne sa décision et la MINUSMA est là. Ebola, ce n'est qu'en septembre que les leaders africains se sont levés pour parler du caractère critique que présente l'épidémie. Qu'est-ce qui justifie cet état de choses et comment est-ce qu'aujourd'hui, les leaders africains que vous représentez se mobilisent pour être plus réactifs face aux grands défis du continent?
Merci. Merci. One more question there, please.
Okay, Issa from AfricanSpot.com. We spoke about independence. Can we talk about independence if there is no economic independence? Because that's one of the issues in Africa, money. Some of the countries are receiving foreign aid or relying on international agency to impose agendas. And those agencies don't necessarily have the same agenda that Africa has. So is the AU celebrating too early when they say, we fought for independence, now let's focus on economic development when we know all the economic issues that Africa has? Thank you.
Thank you. L'avant-dernière question. Yes, please go ahead.
Merci. But it's going to be in English. Stefano Vaccara, La Voce di New York, Radio Radicale in Rome. My question is about the thousands of Africans that try to reach Europe every year, and many dies. We don't even know the exact numbers of many dies. And the situation in Libya made the situation even worse, this was happening even before, what happened in Libya. So I want to know what the African Union is really, how is addressing the issue? In Europe, they don't seem like they really figure out yet how to normalize the situation, if you can have it. But what is the African Union doing to try to, because this is also a human rights issue, how to stop this trafficking? These people want to save their life from civil wars for things, okay. But there is also trafficking, human being trafficking involved.
Thank you. So the final question there.
Thank you. My name is Femi Akonde from TVC News in Lagos, Nigeria. My question is, the African Union has set a very ambitious agenda, the 2063 agenda. And of course, you've also identified the issues. You want Africa to be gun free by 20. I can't remember exactly when. But of course, you have your own set goals. But I want to know: is there a kind of blueprint that would guide government of African countries and in terms of leadership and strategies for economic development? Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, you have the floor.
I should start with the issue of peacekeeping. Yes, there is, there are troops, foreign troops in Africa, and there is also at the same time there is a struggle in this issue of peacekeeping or peace missions, as we are now calling it, and special political missions also in Africa. And the question is that the African Union is now more and more convinced that African problems should be solved by Africans. But the African Union does not have the whole financial or the logistical means in order for this to be implemented, and that is adding a budget to the United Nations, and the peacekeeping budget keeps growing, and that's why there is an overall review of this. So there are two ways. Either the United Nations is going to do it, or the African Union is going to do it, and we will be supportive to them. So it is failing in the purview of the United Nations, either in the form of joint missions or in the form of peacekeeping missions. But I think gradually the regional approach and the African standby force, when it's going to be established, is going to play much more better role as a regional force rather than depending more and more on the United Nations.
There is also the fact that the number of foreign troops is growing. It's not becoming smaller. So maybe you know how to change this.
Well, you want to repeat
that? No, Majid. I think they are counting on the opposite side. Count on the oversight. Most of the African the troops deployed in African, the contingents deployed on the African continent in peacekeeping operations are Africans. So don't see only the train which arrives late. See also the train which is arriving on time, which is the presence of the Africans in peacekeeping operations. And not only over that one. Let's talk about the rapidity of deployment of the of Africans in conflict situations. I think if you have observed, be it in West Africa where ECOWAS are deployed very quickly on the ground, because our mechanism and doctrines with the United Nations are different. So we can use this difference by deploying faster, and then before any peacekeeping operation is established. Central African Republic, we deployed faster. Darfur, if you remember, the African troops were on the ground faster because we have this flexibility in the continent. So I don't think it is a right theory to say that we deployed later than others. Now, what happened in Mali? In Mali, it's not because the decisions were not taken on time. Maybe Dr. Mayaki may come back to when we talk about Libya as well. But it's because the main problem of financing the operations was not solved. Because you have many troops reaching Bamako without capacity of reaching the north, apart from the Chadians who moved very, very fast. Because it is a country which has this capacity. And we know all these difficulties. This is why you have a new trend in the African Union, while we are solving the problem for the brigades, to have the CARIC, which is the force which can be deployed very faster, of countries who have the means to move faster than others and having the means of it. So to fill this gap of late deployment if this happens. I think we should review the theory of faster deployment. The region certainly deploy faster than the international community. Now, let's say one thing. When we move from the mechanisms of prevention and resolution of conflict, which you know was the MADA, we in the African continent, we focused a lot on prevention at the beginning. But taking into account the evolving situation in Somalia, where nobody wants to go, apart from the Africans who went there. After the situation in Rwanda, we thought we should review our doctrine and focus on peacekeeping operation. But what we said, I do remember very well the statement made by Salim Ahmed Salim as Secretary General of the OAU at the time. He said, Africans are going to reinforce the capacity, but this is not the meaning of the world not to take its responsibility. Because maintaining peace in Africa is also a world responsibility. And when we talk about the United Nations, sometimes even we forget that African countries are also members of the United Nations. So let's say it is a complementary exercise. We are doing our part, and the international community also should assist the African continent to do so. Now, on the foreign troops, certainly we are not saying it's a pride for the African continent. We never said it. It has never been a pride for the African continent. But that's why we are reinforcing our mechanism in order to have the Africans involved in the solution of the problems. Otherwise, we could only wait the world to do so, but we are not waiting the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Mayaki, please.
Clear on dependence to aid. If you take the figures of the DAC committee, the Development Assistance Committee of the OECD, Africa has reduced tremendously its dependence to aid. Less than 60 million Africans out of 1 billion live in countries where aid is more important than public resources in order to fund development. So, and resource mobilization has been increased by threefold in the last 10 years. So we are much less aid dependent. And governments no longer generally define their development strategies on the basis of partners funding. Partner funding is important, but it has to come within the already designed development strategies. On relation to migration, Africa has not finalized its demographic transition. Europe was very lucky contextually, three, four centuries ago, because Europe could finalize its demographic transition by having a lot of immigrants coming to America. Africa hasn't had that opportunity. We are still in our demographic transition process, and this is why so many Africans are immigrating towards Europe. So the only way to solve that issue is to have a Europe-Africa dialogue on this specific issue, because whatever borders are constructed, it will not be the solution. The solution will be how to manage and help Africa manage internally these problems.
Does Africa have a voice here within the UN? You didn't answer to my question.
And also for the international agencies, because I know that in Senegal, the World Bank has destroyed our peanut industry, and our currency also is connected to the French. So all those things are also on the economic side. Can you speak about that and the accountability when international agency impose us structural adjustment that don't give the result that they predicted?
Thank you, colleagues. I think that we need one more press conference to respond to all these questions. I think that we have 1 minute. If you can
I think you can take it maybe on the sidelines to save time. But I think my young sister, what I can tell you, it's for us again as Africans. You know, we need to fix our economies. We are a continent that have a lot of, about 80% of natural resources are in Africa. But why is it that we are poor even after 50 years? Yes, the first 50 years was for political independence. That was good enough. We laid an enabling environment. We don't have time to continue blaming the past. It happened. Let's move on and fix our economies. We know some countries are emerging without even many resources. And I think one factor we have to deal with is governance. Let us have good governance. Let us have peace in our economies, in our countries, so that we can also be able to save. The money that goes to the peacekeeping operation is a lot. So if we can prevent conflicts, ensure that we have harmony and peace in our societies, ensure that people work. There is no free lunch. Otherwise, we are going to beg for another. So I think it's the onus of Africans. There's a lot we can do. Of course, we shall need international support because we are part of the global community. But let us make sure that we raise taxation, we promote investment, we do whatever it takes to make sure that we can become a vibrant economy. Just like, because now the fastest growing economies are in Africa, which means it's possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I thank everybody, I have one announcement to do. It is the launch event of 6th publication of Africa's Peace, Security and Development. It will be tomorrow from 10 to 1 p.m. at the ECOSOC Chamber. I inform you and invite you very warmly. Thank you very much. Thank you, Your Excellencies. Thank you, dear colleagues. Thank you.